The following audio is from LCBC Church. To learn more about LCBC, visit lcbcchurch.com.
Well, next week we're jumping into a great series that I'm excited about called Honest to God, where we're talking about how do we talk to God? How do we do this prayer thing? I think the series will be so freeing for so many people. But before we jump into next week's series, we wanted to take this week and we just wanted to hit the pause button and remind ourselves of one of God's greatest values. A value that has driven him. It's defined him. It's a value that we're told should also define us. And if you're anything like me, this value is often the very opposite of how I am naturally wired, how I'm naturally am, the direction that I most often drift. And if you've been around for a while, hopefully you've heard some of this. And this isn't anything new, but it's a reminder that we've got to take and we can never forget. See, we want to be a church. We want to be a place that not only sees what's going on in our own backyards, around our state, in our communities, but we want to have eyes to see what's happening around the world. We want to be a church that remembers deeply that Jesus's last challenge to us was to go unto all the world, not the easy places, convenient places, comfortable places, but to all the world. And to be his witnesses everywhere. And that when Jesus said to be his witnesses, telling people about him everywhere in Jerusalem, throughout Judea and Samaria, and to the ends of the earth, that we listen and we go. That we go from Jerusalem to Judea to Samaria to the ends of the world. Basically, Jesus' last words were pushing us to remember to not only care for those close to us, like us, near us, but to push ourselves, to push our perspective beyond ourselves, beyond our towns, to see bigger pictures, to see the bigger picture of what's going on beyond our state and our country, to see what's happening in the world. And Jesus knows that we're all sort of homebodies, that we're all naturally a little self-occupied and inwardly focused. And Jesus knew this inward, usward slide is in all of us, and he warns us. In fact, he commands us to fight against it, to look beyond our own four walls and to not miss the big picture of what's happening in this world. But sometimes when we look beyond our four walls and we start to see that bigger picture, to see what's happening on other parts of the world, if we're honest, taking that look, taking that perspective, it hurts. It's uncomfortable. And we don't want to see some of those things. We don't want to see their realities and their pain and their struggle. And I don't know about you, but sometimes I just don't want to have to wrestle with my own privilege and my own excess and how small my problems actually are compared to many's problems in the world. But if we're going to follow Jesus, we have to do what he says, and we have to look and we have to know and we have to see. And some of those things, once we've seen them, we simply cannot unsee them. Some things you can't unsee. Some things you can't unsee. And growing up, I'd heard stories of poverty. I'd heard stories about what's going on in the world. I'd seen pictures. But it wasn't until I was holding onto the back of a moped riding through the hills of Thailand that I realized just how innocent, how naive I really was. At that time, I was 16 years old, and I had just gotten my license. I had this awesome gold Volkswagen Beetle with some big old speakers and a hula girl and dice in the front windows. It was awesome. And I hate to admit it, but I cared way more about myself than I would ever want to admit to anyone. And in that season, out of nowhere, I got an invite to go to Thailand to be a part of a group that was going to provide childcare for this missionary conference on that side of the globe. And if you're unfamiliar with what a missionary is someone who goes from here to there to show love and care. And I knew the missionaries, they were going to show love and care, but I was going for the Thai resort. And I was going to ride an elephant, like wrap my legs around its head and hold on for dear life, ride an elephant. Guys, I did not have noble motives. I was not going to change the world. I was going for the stories and the picture and the food and the swag. And if Instagram had been a thing at that point, I would have been blowing up your phone with my photos. But thankfully, all I had was 24 shots of a disposable camera. You know, the type where it's like click, 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 click. And then you're praying, you got the right shot, and you find out like 12 weeks later when it finally comes back in the mail. Well, and once we got there, as any wise 16-year-old would do, as soon as I got there, I instantly knew the person I needed to become best friends with. I needed to find and befriend the chef, because I needed him to be on my side that week. And so I ended up becoming friends with the chef and actually butchered his Thai name so bad that he just started being like, just call me Peter. You can say that. Just call me Peter. We'll be good. And so Peter and I became really good friends. And each morning, Peter would be waiting for me as I'd walk into the kitchen at the resort, and he'd have an omelet waiting for me and chocolate toast. And then each night, Peter knew I would show up and he'd have a milkshake waiting for me. I spent way too much time with Peter at this resort. Well, Peter, by the end of the week, decided to invite my best friend and I to go on a moped ride with him. Now, quick time out. I have no clue what compelled me to hop on the back of a moped with a stranger in a foreign country. It is not the wisest choice in my life. But I will say that choice in hindsight became a defining moment in my life. See, Joel and I, we met Peter on Saturday morning, early in the morning, and Peter and all of his friends, they were like 5'1" in dress heels, and Joel and I are both like over 6 feet. So when we sat on the mopeds, we literally were wrapping our legs around them, and it looked like a scene from Dumb and Dumber as we started going up the motorcycle. And I managed to pull out my disposable camera and get a shot as we went up the hill. And so like, this is Joel holding on, and like, he got tired of holding on to Peter. And so like, he's holding on the back of the moped, but this moped ride up the side of the mountain was a pivotal point for me, because some things you can't unsee once you've seen them. And Peter had a surprise for us. We thought we were just riding through the hills, but once we rode to the top of the mountain, Peter turned. And he turned off the road and he got on a dirt trail and we started going into the jungle. And we traveled for an hour or so back into the jungle, and at times we had to actually stop and pick up the mopeds and carry them over streams and rivers and push them up over banks. And we had no clue where Peter was taking us. And as we followed this dirt trail, all of a sudden, we just like popped out of the jungle, off this path, into a village, into this rustic village. And it was a village of broken down homes and wooden huts and dirt floors and bamboo walls. It was a village with half-naked kids running around in tattered clothes and adults who had seen way too much life. They were way too weathered and worn out from the challenges they had faced. And guys, as we stepped into this village, my jaw just dropped. My jaw dropped seeing true poverty for the first time, like living on less than a dollar a day type poverty. Everyone in the village, as soon as we showed up, they just instantly came running out, staring at us, and they started wanting to touch our skin and to touch our hair, and they like looked so deeply into our eyes, like they could see into our soul, and the kids started to want to have photos with us, and so they're circling up with us to get photos, and while all of this is happening, Peter leans over, and he just says in my ear, he goes, "You're probably the first white person many of them have ever seen. You might be the first to ever see this village." And then he welcomed us to such and such refugee camp. And I wish I could tell you I remember all the details of where the camp was and where they were fleeing from. But if I'm honest, I was just in shock. I didn't know how to take all this in, and I was being flooded with emotions at that moment. And Peter kept talking, but all I kept remembering in that moment was, how is this refugee camp? How is this level of poverty and need just literally a mountaintop from that resort with all the luxuries and all the decadence and excess and the chocolate toast and the 6-egg omelets and the milkshakes? How is this just a mountaintop from that? And actually, how is this just a plane ride from my home with my Volkswagen and my friends and my video games and, well, my everything? And how does this place and my place coexist at the same time, on the same planet? How is this happening? And sometimes you just can't unsee what you've seen. You can't unsee what you've seen. And if I'm honest, my natural response was to simply stop looking, to not look into their eyes, to turn my head, to not let their eyes look into me, to not hear their stories. Because if I'm honest, I didn't want to know their stories, and I didn't want to see their pain, and I didn't want to have to reconcile my reality with their reality, because my ignorance in that moment was so blissful. But sometimes you can't unsee what you've seen, and that moped ride wrecked me. It like tattooed itself on a part of my soul, and I swore coming out of the jungle that day that I would never forget, but life does happen. And as we got back on the plane, I did forget, and I got reabsorbed back into my own little world with my Volkswagen and my girlfriend and my high school drama and my sports, and I just forgot. But that village and those kids and the dirt floor and the six-year-old pushing this huge millstone around grinding grain, those images would frequently sneak back in. And when they did, I would find myself having to hold those memories, those experiences in one hand, and then on the other hand, my current pampered life in the other. And I wish I could say that my life was different because of what I had seen, that I had been changed. But if I'm honest, at the time, I was just embarrassed. I felt guilty. I felt ashamed of what I had and what they didn't. And I started to become haunted by this question. Haunted by the question of how do we live here knowing that's how they live there? How do we live here in all of our luxury and all of our privilege and all of our excess knowing that that's how they live there? For a short season, I became convinced that because of that, I needed to become a missionary, that I needed to go from here to there to help and care. And the only way that I could help would be by going and moving. And that would be the best response that I would have. And well, I then took my first foreign language course, and I quickly realized being a missionary was not going to be in my future because that was, how do I say it, a train wreck. Like, guys, I can barely speak proper English, much less try to learn a second one. And it was going to have to be a miracle for me to learn a second language. But the only miracle that I got after trying really, really hard was I got a new Spanish teacher who was super naive, and I got to bribe her with brownies to pass Spanish. Like, I literally baked her brownies, wrote mucho gracias across the top, put it on her desk, and I passed the class with brownies. Like, I cannot learn foreign languages. It was awful. So I discovered that more than likely I was not going to be a missionary because I had really struggled to learn languages, but I couldn't shake the question. I couldn't shake, how do we live here knowing that's how they live there? How do we live here knowing that's how they live there? And well, life kept moving forward and doors open, doors closed. And fast forward, I found myself falling in love with this church in a cornfield up in Pennsylvania called LCBC. And I never thought I'd get to be a part of the team, but all of a sudden I found myself a part of the team. And I was a part of just some incredible seasons. But there was this one really sweet six-year season that I got to serve with Brad Still. And Brad Still was actually a former missionary who then came on our staff to lead our global initiatives and then transitioned to leading our Lancaster City campus and now he serves at Lancaster City and then also at our Lebanon campus. And I promised, and that time that I spent with Brad, I really do think every bad habit that I've learned as a campus pastor, I picked up from him. But also in that season of being his student men director, I just loved getting to work for him. I loved getting to be a part of the Lancaster City, and I loved how God worked it for me to get to sit with Brad weekly and to pick his brain and to ask him questions and to poke at him and to really work through how do we live here knowing that's how they live there. And so Brad and I talked about this question all the time, and God used Brad to expand my thinking in profound ways. Like we spent time talking about a mission tourism and the harm that it causes. Like, we talked about how it costs anywhere from $20,000 to $50,000 to send a team of just 10 people to work in a village. And that money could provide the salaries for local workers for years. And those local workers could invest back into their communities in a better way than we ever could. We talked about the damage that rich Americans do, thinking that we know what's best, and when we swoop in and how we accidentally do more damage than good. And we read books like Toxic Charity and When Helping Hurts, and we just kept processing and processing. And Brad told me stories about the Americans, really good-hearted Americans who sent boatloads of rice to certain regions trying to help. And what they didn't realize is by sending all of that rice to a region, they actually flooded the local markets, driving the price of rice down and accidentally driving all of the local rice farmers out of business. And then the day came that the boats ran out of rice, but the country had no more farmers, and they actually left the country worse than when they found it. Brad and I talked about so much. And in that season, God used him to teach me so much. But now I was not only haunted by the question of how do we live here, knowing that's how they live there, but Brad introduced the second question of how do we help? How do we help without messing it up more? How do we actually respond without messing up more? And I found myself paralyzed, but I realized that we're in a serious catch-22 here because on one hand, we have to respond. Like, we have to respond to not only kids who live on dirt floors in Thailand, but we have to respond to the fact that 800 kids under 5 die daily because of unclean water. Yesterday, 800. 300 kids died because of dirty water. Today, 800 kids will die because of dirty water. We have to respond to the 40 million men, women, and children in slavery today, 10 million of those being kids. We have to respond to the millions of fatherless kids around our globe. They're fatherless because their fathers were forced to fight in a civil war that they could have cared less about, but they knew if they didn't fight that their homes would be burnt and their families would be hurt. We have to respond to the roughly 689 million people living in extreme poverty. That's living on less than $1.90 a day. Guys, that's roughly 1 out of 10 people in our planet are living in extreme poverty. Numbers like these keep going, but every number has a name, and every name has a story, and every story is important to Jesus. And so when Jesus says that we have to love, he wasn't joking. So when Jesus says, "This is my commandment, love each other in the same way I have loved you," we've got to listen and we've got to ask, what does that mean? What does it mean to love as Jesus was? And so he says, hey, if you got 2 shirts, give one to the poor. If you have food, share it with those who are hungry. He also said, I tell you the truth, when you refuse to help the least of these, my brothers and sisters, you are refusing to help me. And then it goes on and he says, if someone has enough money to live well and sees a brother and sister in need but shows no compassion, how can God's love even be in that person? Guys, numbers like that, verses like this, these are holy gut punches. These are like reality check moments. And Jesus wasn't joking around when he told us to go into all the world, not just the lovely, not just the comfortable, not just the convenient, but all of the world. And last week, as we wrapped up our series, we talked about how we were created, loved, and blessed to be a blessing to the world. We were created for good works, for the good of the world. And this is one of the major ways we step into that we live that out. So the question of how do we live here, knowing that's how they live there, and how do we help without messing it up more? The amazing news, the hopeful news, is the news that has given me so much joy is knowing that there's actually an answer. There's actually a really, really good answer, a shockingly simple answer. And the best answer, the best response that we've discovered and the best solution that we found, and this isn't just like an LCBC finding it thing. This is like global leaders from the world, around the world, humanitarians from around the world saying, this is the best response that is globally focused and helping and not hurting and lasting change. The best response to all of the need and all of the names and all the numbers and all the stories that follows Jesus into the world, into the hardest of places, the best response that's been discovered is child sponsorship. It's like a couple of 20s a month, become a pen pal, write a letter back and forth, share updates with a child sponsorship. And guys, you might've been like me when I first heard that. I was so skeptical. I didn't trust that it just wasn't another slick way to emotionally move me into giving up money each month. I wasn't convinced that just a couple of bucks a month would actually make a difference. And honestly, there were moments I wasn't convinced these kids that were on these photos were even real, that they were being made up to make money. Guys, when I first heard about this, I was so skeptical. I thought surely the problems of this world are too big, too bad, too much for a simple child sponsorship to make a significant difference. Well, God used Brad Steele again in my life to expand my thinking. About 11 years ago, Brad, my boss at the Lancaster City, he gave me an invitation that changed everything for me. See, he gave me an invitation. And this time I found myself going over another insane mountaintop. But this time I wasn't on the back of a moped hanging on to a tiny Thai dude. This time I was actually in the back of a tactical SUV crawling over a mountaintop to visit a community that our Lancaster City team was sponsoring at that moment. It was a community deep in the mountains of the Bella Vue La Montagne Mountains of Haiti. It was about 3 hours outside of Port-au-Prince. But this time as I was riding over the mountaintop, I wasn't a naive, inexperienced 16-year-old. By this time, I'd been in the killing fields of Cambodia, And I'd stepped over bones coming out of the soil that were being exposed. I'd sat across the table in Cambodia of the National History, the director of National History, trying to figure out how does he tell the story of the Khmer Rouge in a way that doesn't allow it to repeat. I stood at the gates at Auschwitz, the notorious World War II concentration camp, and saw the gas chambers. I'd been in the law offices of Phnom Penh on the morning after a raid of a sex brothel where girls under the age of 18 had been rescued. I'd been to Mexico and to Vietnam, and I'd seen poverty up close and personal. This time, I wasn't innocent. This time, I was prepared. This time, I had also seen response to this stuff done horribly wrong. I'd seen it done manipulatingly wrong, like chaotic and degrading, creating dependency, just terrible, terrible responses. And so when I rode on the back of this SUV over the mountaintops, I was ready to rip them to shreds, ready to prove that they were yet again another corrupt organization just emotionally milking Americans for their money. I was so, so skeptical. And so I started asking questions. Like my first question was, why are we not in Port-au-Prince? Port-au-Prince has a lot of poverty and paved roads. Like, why are we going over this mountaintop right now? And Arch Lay, our gracious host, he looks back over me as we're going over all these bounces and bumps, and he looks at me and he says, because there's a ton of organizations working in that space, and some of them are doing incredible work, but sadly, some of them are just creating more dependence and less dignity. And then he looked me in the eyes, and he goes, but we're going where the most vulnerable are. And the most vulnerable, they don't have the luxury of paved roads. So he said that, and I was like, okay, well, why are we on this mountain and not on that mountain over there? And he said, oh, that's easy to reply. He said, those leaders on that mountain, those tribal leaders, they are still too selfish and unwilling to do what's best for the community versus what's best for their own pockets. And then he shared how before they would ever invite a church into sponsorship, they work with the local tribal leaders to make sure that those leaders are leading towards positive change in the community, that they are committed to their community's good, not just their own personal good. And Archley shared that they will work with these leaders to identify their biggest problems, and then they come up with the solutions to their problems, and then they empower them to do that. And they said sometimes they have to do some coaching and training and teachings to actually understand what the problems actually are. He said many times these leaders, because of where they're at, they'll just say, our village is poor, and we have no money, and we're starving to death. And so what the village leaders think is that they just need money, and money fixes everything. And when really what they need is to make money, and they need to grow more food, and they need to stay more healthy, and that the first step to all of this is actually not money. It's actually just a simple behavioral change, a small change that they can already make of where they get their water from. And if a community, Archley said, won't make that free behavioral change, then you can give them all the money in the world and they'll never make lasting change. That's true for them. That's also true for us, but that's a sermon for another day. But once they get a community to start to make that change, that free behavioral change, then they start leading them to what are the steps 2 and step 3 and step 4 that they need to go to have lasting generational change. And so he said that we were going where there were real needs, but also where there was a real willingness to do some real work to change. Ashley Archley, I said, so what do they do with the communities that don't want to be a part of this, that aren't willing to change? She just said, we go where the soil is ready. And then we let those other leaders, those other villages, watch it work for themselves. And it was at this moment that I realized that these guys, these leaders, they're doing things differently than what I'd seen. And that's when Archley just leans and he goes to me, he goes, I cannot wait to show you child sponsorship. How we're helping families shift their way of thinking and their ways of doing, changing the foundations to which their entire lives are built upon. And then he started showing us all of this by first taking us to a school. He took us to a school that the kids were able to pay for to attend. Teachers were getting salaries from because sponsorships were making it happen. And these kids were learning how to think and how to read and how to reason. And many of these kids, for the first time in their family's history, were being given an opportunity that their parents never had. These kids were going to be able to do things their parents and their grandparents could never have been able to do just because they were learning how to read. And then we traveled to this cistern, this like giant box thing that holds water. And these cisterns were placed where community members could walk a mile or so for clean water, versus 4 miles or so down the mountain for dirty water. And he said they actually make the elders of the communities teach the need for clean water. And then the men of the community will actually carry the rocks for the cistern, and the women will spread the mud, and the kids will paint the walls. And then after all of that, is it their well? And that's the thing that they value and they know the need for, and they work to protect and they work to use. Guys, as he told me that story, my heart just broke thinking about the hundreds of wells around the world that had been drilled in communities of people that had never been taught to actually value the well or to use the well or to repair the well. They didn't know that the well could like give them hope and life and clean water that they desperately needed. They didn't know that their sickness was coming from getting dirty water when the clean water was provided. No one took the time to teach them. And sponsorship pays for the teaching, for the building, for the valuing of this life-giving water. And it was at this point that I started to no longer see poor kids having to walk for water. I started to see empowered kids changing their family's life with clean water. Water that was there because you showed up here and sponsored that kid in that community. And then we went to churches that were helping teach people not only to drink safe water, but to turn to the living water of Jesus. I mean, look at this sign. Look at this sign from this pastor. He is welcoming you. He's welcoming you, LCBC, because he knows that much of what he is able to do in his community is because you show up here. And that because of your sponsoring kids, Archley and his peers are working to rally these pastors to support each other and their community, to strengthen their communities, to teach their community, to be the hands and feet to their communities. And after we left the church, we visited so many fields. And we saw kids carrying corn out of the fields that they had planted with seeds that your sponsorship provided that helped them make dinners and for their families back home that changed how they were seeing things. They weren't just getting a handout to be picked up off the back of a truck. They were giving a new way of life to be able to provide for their family. And then Archley, he took us to see the cutest little boy. The cutest little boy who was so excited to show us his bunnies. Bunnies that will feed his family for years to come. Bunnies that he has because you gave them. Your sponsorship provided it. And then Archley did something I was not prepared for. He took us to meet our sponsored kid. He took us to see Emmanuel. And to meet Emmanuel and his family, and his mom, and his siblings, and to step into Emmanuel's house. And I remember showing up, and Emmanuel's face had been on our fridge for months and years. But what I remember most from that moment walking into his front yard was his mom grabbing my hand, and how insanely rough his mother's hands were, and how weak mine felt in hers. And I remember thinking, oh, this is just going to be like a polite little gentle hug moment. But she squeezed, and it was one of those squeezes that your hand just crumples in. And then she does that mama thing where she just pulled me in. And then she put her arm around me. And I knew that we were about to hug, and I didn't realize how long we were going to hug. But then as she's like squeezing, and I'm like going in and going in, I realized that this hug meant something to her. And it soon started to dawn on me as I realized that this was the moment that she could not say thank you enough, but she could hug thank you. And that day she gave me a hug like I've never experienced. And I remember feeling so awkward and so small and so undeserving of what her eyes were trying to say to me as I looked into them that day. I mean, to Pearl and I, it was just a couple of bucks a month. It was just a letter that we sent here and there. I mean, Emmanuel was just a kid on the fridge that we sponsored because the church told us to. Like, we didn't think much about him. But to her, he was her kid. And her kid. was getting a shot at life, a shot at education, at hope, at healthcare, at spiritual care. Her kid, because he was our sponsored kid, was being offered a whole new life, a life that she knew she would never be able to make possible for him. And I thought this whole time that the answer to all of these big, huge problems in the world, to all these numbers that break our heart, I thought it was going to be so much more than just a sponsorship. I thought it'd be so much more than just a couple of dollars a month. I thought it would be something that would have to completely disrupt my life and change everything. But to her, my little was a whole lot to them. My not a lot was a whole lot to them. My not a lot was a whole lot to them. And I just started to see the wisdom of all these local leaders who are working to make sustainable, long-term, impactful change. So guys, I gotta be honest, I don't know how to fix all of the world's problems. I don't know how to know beyond a shadow of a doubt that Emmanuel will forever be taken care of. I don't know how to fix all of that, but what I do know beyond a shadow of a doubt is that Emmanuel's mom doesn't care that I don't know. She just knows that someone cared for her baby. And to her baby, to her kid, to that family, the little that I did have figured out through child sponsorship was rocking their world, changing their world. And to them, it meant everything. And so that day, with that hug, it made me a believer. It made me a believer that my not a lot is a whole lot to them. That it's a lie. It is a lie straight from Satan that the problems of this world are bigger than what we can fix. It is a lie that the problems are bigger than our God. Guys, the problems are not bigger than God. God knows that when he's in it and we're working together, our not a lot in his hands become a whole lot. And it can change a lot of communities and a lot of lives, and a lot of mothers will one day hug strangers on this side of heaven or the next saying, thank you. Thank you. Thank you that your little bit did so much for my little one. When we show up here and sponsor a child there, that child gets a chance to choose a new life. When we show up here and sponsor a child there, a local leader gets a chance to lead in profound ways. When we show up here and sponsor a child there, we fulfill God's command to go into all the world and be his hands and feet. When we show up here and sponsor a child there, we are choosing to live responsibly in a world that has been irresponsibly generous towards us. We must keep showing up here to help others keep showing up there. And I am so excited because in less than 24 hours, actually tonight, we get to get on a plane. There's a group across LCBC's Mannheim and Lebanon and West Shore campuses that will be traveling from here to there to be able to say, we see you, we love you, we are in this with you, and you're not alone. There is a community in Pennsylvania saying, you're not by yourself, you're not forgotten. The God who changed us is the same God who's willing to change you, and our church is in it with you. And so in a couple of minutes, you get to hear from your local leader about where in the world your campus is showing up. And you get a chance to step in to say, I will be here so Jesus can change them there. Now, some of our campuses this year, because of how volatile and vulnerable their sponsor area is, it means you gotta be a little bit flexible this year, but that doesn't mean that we don't still get to show up here to make an impact there. My prayer is that by us each doing our part here, trusting God that we have to go there, that God does something profound there. Guys, if you're not sponsoring a kid, I just have to sincerely ask, why not? Why not today? Why not take your little and let God use it to change a lot in someone's life? And I know inflation makes us think really weird thoughts. Guys, give up your coffee before you give up on a kid. And if you are thinking a kid, I just wanna say thank you. Thank you for stepping in. Thank you for showing up to love those kids. And if you're in a season that you can do more, man, love one more. Because guys, there is mamas around this world waiting to one day give you a hug that might change your life as much as that one changed mine. Because our little can do a whole lot when we give it to Jesus. Jesus, may we be a church. May we be a church that never grows tired of talking about others. Whether those others are in our backyard and in our community, or whether those others are around the globe, may we be a church, may we be a people who continually fight the urge to look inward and will force our eyes to look upward and outward to see what is happening around this globe. And then Jesus, may we responsibly, wisely step into partnership with you and your leaders around the world to make a difference and a profound difference in your name and the lives of children and communities and leaders so that there can be a lasting hope within communities. And so Jesus, I pray that this morning, right now, that hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of us across all of our campuses will hear your invitation to show up here so you can make a difference there. Jesus, help us step out of our own little worlds and partner with you in your big world, playing our small part that in your hands makes a big difference. Jesus, thank you for this church. Thank you for these people. Thank you for the way that you are using so many already to make a difference. And thank you for what you're gonna do this weekend to help so many more experience hope and life change through you. Jesus, it's in your name we pray. We love you, we thank you, and we trust you. Amen.